Thank you so much. Well, continuing with a two-week-old tradition now, there's an oxymoron for you. I'm going to share part of this sermon today, just as I did with Kathy Fletcher 2 weeks ago, when I spoke about prayer through the lens of a religious humanist, and she offered a more theistic take on the subject. Today I'll be speaking, and this is playing off what Harry already said, about the interplay between faith and doubt, why I don't think one can truly exist without the other. Before I offer my thoughts on that, though, David Robbins, who joined our congregation this past spring, and is a part of our Worship Associates team, I will offer his take on the subject. David.
Steve, thank you very much, and thanks to all of you. Death, doubt, and faith. In the summer of my 8th year, the realization of my mortality hit me like a brick. Someday, somehow, I was going to die. I was terrified. I awoke at night struck by this awful knowledge. My fear centered around eternity and loneliness. I pictured myself after death in a field. Well, it was a nice, sunny field. I was alone. I was completely and utterly alone. I had absolutely no doubt that I would spend eternity alone. Forever and ever and ever, without end. I forced myself to push this terror away. Think of a character in a sitcom, not wanting to hear bad news, clasped their palms to their head and chants, la 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 la. I was that character. For me, there was no comedy, only a desperate attempt to survive. If I could now, I would sit down with my 7-year-old self and try to explain that our real fear was not about death. It was a terrible fear caused by loneliness, the terrible fear caused by the inability to connect with those around us. We were alone, lonely, and in despair. My fear, while always there, receded as I grasped for ways to fill the voids in my life. I put on a good face, made my way through school, college, and then into adulthood. I had a tremendous need for approval. I had no sense that I was entitled to have open aspirations. I lived somewhat aimlessly, usually following the path of least resistance. As you might suspect, I fell into things. At different times, my terror surfaced. As a teenager in despair when I contemplated suicide, in my 30s after being fired from a job I worked very hard at, during a very long acrimonious divorce. At each of these occasions, my fears consumed me, and I thought I would die and be alone forever and ever. Later in life, I began to understand that death had little to do with my terror. I began to connect in an open, genuine way with those around me. I even began to forgive myself. I realized I was worthy of love. I met and married an extraordinary woman who saw enough of me to put up with all that I put her through. Together, we raised two talented, intelligent, thoughtful, and compassionate children. That they share my genes continues to amaze me. During the service last fall, a group of our younger parishioners spoke of their individual personal faiths. What I heard from many of them was their belief in themselves and their ability to connect with those around them. Many of them eschewed a belief in a supreme being, an afterlife, or a need to seek redemption. What mattered was what they did here and now, how they cared for themselves, how they cherished those around them. Sitting in a back pew, right over there, I felt a ka-chunk as synapses fired and the final pieces fell into place. Suddenly it, capital I, capital T, made sense. Life is for living. Each of us constantly makes choices. We are responsible for those choices. We make mistakes. We forgive ourselves. We forgive those around us. We do the best we can with what we have based on what we know and believe. We have faith and belief in ourselves and each other. This winter, on a cold January evening, I stood alone outside our house smoking a cigar. The sky was clear. Stars brilliant, the air was crisp. Without a breath of wind, the cigar smoke rose several feet and slowly dissipated over the night. I was enjoying all this, not thinking of anything in particular, when I glanced skyward. I saw stars. I saw planets, the Milky Way, constellations, and the infinite reaches of space. How could this all be by chance? How could there not be some force greater than all of us? As I stood staring upward, I realized that I no longer had the fear of death, isolation, or loneliness. The fear that had terrified me as a child. I did not feel alone, lonely, or without purpose. Eternity is whatever it is, and I no longer fear it. What I did feel was a delicious doubt. While my firm belief, my faith, if you will, is that my life and our lives are what we make of them here and now, I do doubt that we are completely alone. I doubt we are a cosmic accident. What or who do I think is out there? Damned if I know. What I do know is that I'm enjoying the adventure. Enjoying the adventure with you of thinking, listening, talking, and sharing. In the words of that great American philosopher troubadour, Jerry Garcia, what a long, strange trip.
Thanks so much. As I organized my thoughts around this and I read what David had to say and how to come at it, I remembered back the chorus of a hymn. Harry, you may remember this one too, since we came up in similar settings. The chorus of a hymn that was sung, the chorus was sung with great gusto in the church in which I was raised, kind of in the same spirit that we were singing Lean on Me here last Sunday. And it went, on Christ the solid rock I stand, all other ground is sinking sand, all other ground is sinking sand. You're nodding your head. Yeah,
well.
Yeah, you know that one well. All right.
We could do it here.
Yeah, well, we could, but then again, the imagery in those few words is very clear and compelling. One is either standing on the solid rock of belief or sinking into the mire and quicksand of meaninglessness and nihilism. And this is why fundamentalism, in any number of faiths, not just Christianity, has such power. It offers a solid rock to stand on when so much of life looks like sinking sand. And there's a fear factor involved in all this as well. If you wander off or fall off that rock, or you question the actual solidity of the rock, then you are doomed to sinking sand that will swallow you up. So you better stay on the rock, no matter what. In a much more recent time of my life, like in the past few years, I encountered another rhyme that goes a long way in summing up my current faith stance. The words are by my still very much missed, my dear friend, the late Rick Masten. They're found in his poem, Spiritude. Spiritude is a word Rick coined using the poetic license to which he was entitled as an amalgam of spirit and attitude. Spiritude. The line in his Spiritude poem goes, it's only in uncertainty that true hope can be found. And you can bet a sure thing will always let you down. Well, that's a right far cry from standing on a solid rock in this quicksand. But it's where I come out at the moment. Before I finish up, I hope to be able to say why those words also indicate my faith stance. But let's play with Rick's lines for just a minute or two here. We can start by rounding up the usual disclaimers or caveats. Yes, we all have to have what I will call certain operational certainties in place if we're just going to make it from one day to the next. When I drive home later today, I want the certainty that my house will be there and that I'll be greeted by my wife of over 30 years. I prefer as well that the furniture be in the same place in the house as it was when I left it this morning. It's a pretty obvious point, doesn't need a whole lot of belaboring. We would not be able to function if we woke up every morning to nothing but a haze, maze, and mishmash of uncertainty. But we also know at the same time that even our most taken for granted operational certainties can get kicked out from under us at times. In ways that range from merely inconvenient, like a car that won't start, to the tragic, the painful, the devastating. In Indeed, it is the unexpected loss, the sudden crisis, the painful turn of events that remind us of just how fragile those operational certainties really are. So where then is the truth in a lying? Where is the statement of faith in a lying like Rick Mastin saying it's only in uncertainty that true hopes can be found? I think it's good to be aware that Rick wrote these lines in that poem about this. It was about how he was dealing with cancer, a cancer that would eventually take his life, as it did back in May. The line is about believing you have the resources, both within you and from beyond you, to deal with the kinds of uncertainties that are a part of the human condition, even if you specifically do not know or have a fixed belief in the ultimate source of those resources. The truth of that line, especially in the context of the poem, is found when life's uncertainty, the uncertainty that's involved in losing one's life, becomes real. And what David shared with us earlier about this ultimate uncertainty, he said it hit him at a very early age, bringing on, as he described it, a kind of cosmic loneliness. But the antidote to that loneliness, as I found it, and as David seems to be saying as well, has been not to seek absolute surety about anything, but instead to walk through life as if you are sustained and cared for. To fill out this point a little more, I'm going to offer you one of my favorite pieces of personal scripture, to which I know I've cited before, but I'd like to return to it because some wisdom I find is worth repeating. This is from a book published 35 years ago by the theologian and therapist Dr. Sam Keen. The book's called To a Dancing God. I first read this way back when, in Billy Joel's words, I wore a younger man's clothes. The reading. I remember an old cartoon. Sylvester the cat is running away from his ancient enemy, the bulldog. Suddenly he sees the only way of escape is across a pond. Without hesitating, he runs out into the water. So long as he remains unanxious, a lily pad arises to meet each of his advancing feet a split second before he would otherwise sink into the water. Suddenly he becomes alarmed. For although his feet have found support for the journey this far, he can see no visible means of support for the remainder of the way across the pond. The moment he begins to worry about whether the next lily pad will appear on schedule, he sinks into the water, and the bulldog stands on the shore and laughs. King goes on. When I cease asking for guarantees that my feet will find secure ground, support appears from my advancing steps. The trick is to stop demanding certainty and trust in the ability of the self to respond creatively to whatever happens. You can't be graceful, full of grace, looking at your feet. Trust the happiness. And then Dr. Keen shifts into theology mode. He says, I define this position as trustful agnosticism. I accept my life as a gift to be enjoyed responsibly, but I remain ignorant or doubtful about my ultimate context. Well, I love that term, trustful agnosticism. Like Albert Camus' phrase, the benign indifference of the universe that I used in the sermon that Kathy and I shared, at first, trustful agnosticism sounds like an oxymoron. How can you be trustful and agnostic at the same time? But Keen puts those words together in a way that works, just like Camus did with benign indifference. Trustful agnosticism describes very well my life stance at this point. And Sylvester going across the pond, with the lily pads coming up to meet him, is my counterpoint for the solid rock in the midst of sinking sand. Even if you do not know exactly where you're going or what is going to befall you, because you don't, for good or for ill, you can choose to walk through your life in a trustful way. You don't have to stand on the rock being fearful of quicksand. And this is why trustful agnosticism is my faith stance. It is a stance that comes out of the interplay between belief and doubt, the interplay between assurance and uncertainty. Trustful agnosticism provides me with the true hope that is found in uncertainty. In addition, to live by faith is not the same thing as living with absolute certainty and in the absence of all doubt. In fact, it's just the opposite. Those who equate faith with certainty are, I feel, self-deluded. After all, if you have complete certainty, if you're absolutely doubt-free, why do you even need faith in the first place? Faith, as I see it, and as Sam Keen offers it, is a choice to believe certain things about yourself, your world, your universe, and about whoever or whatever you may conceive ultimate reality to be. It's a choice you make in the face of all that is unknown, mysterious, unknowable, even frightful about life. It is the choice of the choices that are made with the full acknowledgement of uncertainty and doubt. Faith, then, is the choice to live as if certain things are true, in the absence of sure knowledge, in the absence of the sure thing that may well let you down. I thought David spoke to these kinds of choices very well when he said, "Life is for living. Each of us constantly makes choices. We make mistakes. We forgive ourselves and those around us. We do the best we can with what we have based on what we believe." Playing off of Dave's words a little more, I live as if there is some force greater than all of us at work, even if I have no absolute assurance of his presence or even know its name. I choose to live as if I am not alone in this universe, even if I have no sure knowledge of who or what it is I am in ultimate relationship with. When I wrote that book on Rick Masten's life and ministry, we collaborated on it as if we would both be around, as if we would both be around to celebrate its completion, knowing we were dealing with uncertainty and doubt as to when Rick's life would end. We got it done. We had a wonderful book launch party at his home church, Unitarian Universalist Church of Monterey, Carmel, California. And Rick died 4 months after that. His death could well have come much earlier, but the lily pads kept coming up long enough just for us to do what we wanted to do and believed we could do. And that was indeed a faith journey for both of us. So I'll close on this note. One more component of faithfully living in the interplay between belief and doubt is to also live with the trust that new light, new truths, new insights will continue to be shown to us, that truth is never final, but an ever-evolving thing. And staying in that interplay between faith and doubt is what keeps the door ever open to new learning, to new ways of being. And that is why it is with joy that we claim the growing light. Those are the closing words to our hymn. I believe it's number 345. With joy we claim the growing light. Let's sing that together.